Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Aoife Dunn is in studio. Let me tell you about Aoife Dunn, newcomer to the comedy circuit. Mad to do this for a long time. Now she's found the right amount of madness to get you on stage. And it was a shock death, and the family is the inspiration behind the clever name of the show, which is called Good Grief. How do you say it? Do you say good grief? You don't have to wear headphones.
Oh, I don't have to wear headphones, thank God.
You'd be uncomfortable in those big heavy things. I wouldn't wear them if I could. Aoife Dunn, welcome.
Thanks so much.
You're a Galway woman.
I am indeed.
And how long have you been performing now in the comedy circuit?
I've only been doing it now a year and a half.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a relative latecomer. But you've dreamt of this all your life.
I have, yeah.
How badly have you been dreaming about it?
So I always tell the story of when I was supposed to be Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. Okay. And I was 14 years of age. And one of the girls in the class, Sarah Jane, she was trying to steal the part from me. And I was like, no, this has to be mine. And then I got the part. It was all going well until my arches fell on my feet. Did you know this is possible?
I hear about it, but
yeah,
it's not something I've ever looked
up. Yeah, I'm 5'1". And all of a sudden God was like, you're going to be smaller.
That is cruel.
So then they were like, well, if you can't...
It's very painful, by the way.
Oh, it's extremely painful. So I couldn't walk in Dorothy's shoes. I was 14 years of age and my whole life, I could see my Oscar fading in the
distance. The shoes are kind of important, aren't they?
Important. So my mom, she did what she normally did. She put like these high heel shoes on. She painted them red. She strapped my feet into them. And I walked into the community centre that day and I was like, Sarah Jane, this will be mine. I have to be Dorothy. I looked deranged, like with these painful feet moving onto the stage. But I think I knew then, like, this has to be, this is my dream.
You needed to be on a stage somehow,
absolutely,
somewhere. That was
absolutely
what you were going to do. Did you ever get to play Dorothy ever since?
No, that was my only in the community centre in Kinvara. But still, the highlight of my career, Oliver.
God, you know, you're after reminding me. I said Kinvara was in Clare last week and the amount of texts we got.
Oh, but a lot of people think it is on the border.
It's on
in
the
fairness.
Road, you see, isn't it? Coming out of the burn.
Yes,
that's
yes.
But Kinvara's the one with the giant thatch. Is that a hotel that's entirely thatched?
Yes, yes.
It
yes,
is?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go, sir. So apologies to everyone in Kinvara, but you're putting it in the map anyway.
Yes.
One comedy show at a time.
Exactly.
What were you? What's the response, by the way, a year and a half of comedy? What kind what are people saying to you?
I think a lot of the comedians who've been at it a while hate me, but... I think people are maybe, I suppose people in the comedy scene are maybe, you know, shocked that it's moving so fast for me.
It is.
But then people who know me, they're not surprised because they're like, this is what you were born to do your whole life. And a part of me thinks like, I suppose I've been waiting, even though I haven't performed, I haven't been on stage. The last time I was on stage was when I was 19 years of age. Mm-hmm. And I went to London to do this. We had won this competition, me and my theatre group. So we went to the National Theatre of London. I was like, this is it. This is the beginning of my dreams. I told my mom. I was like, right, I'm in London. Bye. Good luck. Like, next stop is Broadway. You'll never see me ever again. And then when I got there afterwards, there was all these like young girls there and they were around the same age. And they kept asking me like, what school do you study at? Do you study at RADA? And I started looking at their clothes and I was like, oh my God, these are rich girls.
Oh no.
And I have everyone around me. And the thing is, when you grow up in Kinvara or Galway, there's no such thing as class. So I didn't
realize.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was such a thing as like poor people and rich people. And for the first time in my life at 19, I was like, oh my God, if you want to be an actress, you need to be rich and you need to have like parents in the arts. And my mom was a single mom and we were from like, you know, poor background. And I looked at these girls, I looked at my clothes and I was like, this isn't for me. And I came home and I hung up my...
That kind of killed your confidence.
Honestly,
it
was... Away. Yeah, so it's like the first time I kind of came to terms with privilege and I was like, I felt so intimidated, so intimidated. I came home and I kind of bullied myself out of it. And when I think of her like at 19, I kind of get choked up even remembering this story because I'm thinking to myself, God, like the poor thing, like I think of me, younger me, and she. Yeah, so I didn't go near the stage again until a year and a half ago.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Extraordinary story. Mm-hmm. You look fresh and young, but it's quite, that's a small bit of a distance. But some working class actors do make it
in
London. I was thinking Jack Connell recently. I don't know if you've seen Sinners, that film.
Yes,
really well.
Brilliant. Yes, yes, yes.
He's like the one who broke through all the posh.
Yes, and Barry Keoghan as well. And
But particularly in the London scene.
In the London scene.
Especially.
Yes.
Especially difficult. Okay, so, but by the way, did you train alongside Nicola Coughlan? Is that something you've made up for comedy purposes?
No. Poor Nicola, she gets used in my comedy show.
Oh, good.
As the one who made it. So yeah, we did drama together since we were both 11 years of age. So we used to go in. Yeah, mom used to drive us in and we take it in turns because she lives in Oranmore, so not too far. And we go in every Saturday morning and from ages 11 till we were about like 18. 18, 19. And the thing is, when I was 19, that's when I gave up. But she just had this like fire in her belly to keep going. But yeah, I make a joke in the show that, like, you know, I'm at home taking care of my brothers and drive my brother to, you know, to tan his body when he became a bodybuilder. And I'm just thinking, and then I'm looking at my phone and Nicola's in Bridgerton. I was like, okay, I'm just putting tan on my brother's body while Nicola Coughlin's in
Bridgerton. We were together at the same time.
Hey, this wasn't the plan.
Bridgerton Derry Girls and Kim Kardashian's fast fashion brand.
Yes.
That's the dream, isn't it?
That's the dream.
That's what we all would do. We'd all sell out, I swear. Nicola, she was obviously lovely growing up.
She was. Imagine if I was about to give you the inside scoop. No, she's actually...
But a good row would help drive sales.
I'm like, okay, I'll go. I'll give you it.
Meet
together.
She
was horrible. No, she wasn't. She's the nicest person in the world.
Do you stay in touch? Is that possible
in
her world?
Yeah, she's amazing. She's still like so humble and like brings her friends to everything. Like when Bridgerton had their red carpet event here recently, she invited me. I actually had to say no. I had to turn her down.
What?
I was like, I've got my own thing going on, Nicola.
Okay, you have to show up for your stage work.
Yeah, I've got 30 people coming to my show. I can't.
It is called Good Grief.
Yes.
Like I said, sorry, I don't know if you could hear because you were putting on your headphones, but do you kind of go, Good Grief? Or do you go, Good Grief?
Very good.
What's your tone?
Good Grief.
Good Grief. You were backpacking at the age of 23.
Yes.
Around Bolivia, which sounds like beautiful.
Yes.
This is around 2010, isn't it?
Mm-hmm,
so Ireland was not a very pleasant place to be. And you get the worst news imaginable.
Yeah, because obviously we just hit recession right back in Ireland. So I did what every young 23-year-old wants to do when she's Irish. And I just like, right, I'm going to go travel the world. And so we started in Argentina and we were traveling about 2 months and it was going great. Met loads of lovely Argentinian boys. Perfect. And then we were just about an hour from the Bolivia border and my phone rang and I knew it was mum because she was the only one who had my phone number.
Right.
And it was one of those old burner phones. So I picked it up and I was like, mummy, because I hadn't talked to her in 2 weeks and we were best friends. So I was so excited to fill her in on everything. And then I heard a man's voice on the other side. And it's so bad, but I remember hating this guy for so long just for saying these words. And he just was like, your mom's died suddenly. And she was only 53. And, you know, she was she did yoga and everything like that. We never really saw it coming. Like, she was the epitome of health. And I remember even when it happened, I smashed my phone on the ground and I couldn't speak for a second. I think I hoped that I would just like break time and that I would just, none of this had to be real. I didn't even tell my friend. Like, the bus kept driving and for a few minutes I didn't speak. And my friend was sat there. She was like laughing with some people behind us. And she was like, what happened? And I was so afraid to say it in case I made it even more real. But then one of my best friends from home called me and called my other friend. And that was it. Yeah.
Man, that bus journey must go through your head over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was really, really difficult. Thank God I say like we didn't make it to Bolivia because my phone wouldn't have worked. So we were only, an
Isn't
hour from the border.
Yeah.
An hour from the border and she wouldn't have been able to contact me for like 4 days. So I don't know how I would have made it home for the funeral. So, and then after that, everything is kind of a haze. Like, it took days to get home, but like the local community, my family, everybody got together and paid for everything, organized everything, booked everything.
You remember the journey home though, don't you?
100%.
Which is incredible because most people, as I say, go into the haze and it's a blur, but you remember very kind of visceral moments, particularly when you get to Dublin airport.
Yeah. So like I remember we were stranded in Paris for hours because it was the winter of the big freeze. So all of Europe was just blanketed in snow. And I remember I was crying so much that I was embarrassed because people around were excited to come home for Christmas, right? There was loads of girls back from Australia and there was a man there and I think he had seen me and he got on the plane. He was actually sat next to me and he started talking to me to kind of distract me. And he had this kind of American accent, so we assumed he was from America. And he was like, hey guys, I'm from Dublin, but I've been in Boston for 20 years. Do I sound American? I was like, you do. You really do. And then as I got off the plane, he pulled my hand and he gave me a big hug. And he said, whatever you're going home to, I promise it gets better.
So he knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah, he knew. He must have seen, or maybe he's been there himself.
He just did the nice distraction thing.
That's it. And there was so many people like on the airplane. People made sure that I had a whole seat to myself at the back. And like the air hostesses gave me like chocolates. And I met the nicest of people because they say like in the worst of times, the best of people come out. And when I got to the airport, my best friends had made that treacherous journey in the winter of the big freeze all the way from Galway to Dublin just to carry me home, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
You never saw or heard from that man again, did you?
No, I sometimes, I was like, what? I need to find him. And you know, I know I have a boyfriend now, but maybe this is a really cute...
But these angels kind of appear, don't they?
100%.
To help you along.
Oh no, it was like, I say to people, like, it was the worst time of my life, but I saw the most incredible form of humanity. Like, even when we came down to the small road down to my house, I was in the car with my friends and I closed my eyes because this was the road that I used to take going down to see my mum after school. Okay. And so many memories came flooding back and it was almost too intense. So I closed my eyes and it was dark, it was cold. And my friends stirred me. They're like, you have to see this. And all the houses, all these sort of local neighbours, they had put candles on the wall to guide me. Yeah, just to guide me home. So to make it a little easier.
Wow, that's extraordinary.
No, it was beautiful. Beautiful.
We're loving Kinvara more and more by the
honestly.
Way. What were your plans in life at 23 before that news?
So I was like, I was going to do human rights masters. I had signed up to do that. And that was going to be my life. I was going to travel the world. And then, I mean, I think I always thought maybe I go back to acting at some point.
Yeah.
But then when mom died, my brother was still in school.
It's a single parent household.
A single parent household. Now, exactly.
You're the head of the household.
Exactly. Yeah.
At 23.
Yeah. And I couldn't cook to save my life.
So two younger brothers.
Yes, I have two younger brothers and my sister's a year older, but she has an intellectual disability. So it kind of fell on me to, yeah, I suppose, take the helm of the ship. And one of my brothers was in college, but the other was only doing his leave insert.
Right, so he's living at home.
Yeah, so getting up, getting him off to school, making lunches, cooking his dinner, doing a bit of grinds to make a bit of money because we had no money coming in as well. And then our local community, they set up a charity for us.
Yeah.
To make sure that my brothers could get to college.
That's like, amazing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we never asked for any of this. They came, they're like, you've no say, we're doing this for you. And they had it all like legally above board. They had a board members and everything like that. So then when my brothers got through to college, it stopped. But
is there no council fund or state grant for homes like that? Because obviously your brother being in
yes.
school still was a dependent.
Yeah, so they're technically orphans under the law. So yeah. I applied for this welfare for orphans, just for the two of them. And they said, no, because your dad's still alive, even though he wasn't supporting. And I appealed and appealed and they kept saying no. So I wrote a letter basically saying I'm going to go public with this. And these two children were left orphaned using my human rights, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I got a call from the Department of Welfare, the head, apologising profusely and backdating the payment. So,
Wow. So yeah. the battle was won.
The battle was won. And that was the beginning of... me realizing my power.
During the battle, it was the community that
it was the community
paid
yeah.
the bills,
yeah.
kept things together. Amazing story.
We wouldn't have. I honestly don't think I'd be here without the support of our local community. I don't know how the four of us, because we're all doing amazingly now, you know. And it's like we were orphaned. There was no money. Mom was incredibly in debt, and to be where we all are now, like it's just thanks to the local people. Honestly,
what was the day to day like in the household?
I always say to people, the beginning was grand because Irish funerals are great crack. Mm-hmm. And sure, everyone's, you know, those women that come and they make tea and yeah. curries. I was like, I don't even think I've met them before. I don't even think they exist. I think they just go around to every funeral
in
Ireland.
They're deployed.
Yes.
They arrive in fleeces. Don't they? Women in a fleece, they seem to solve every problem.
With burkos. I've never heard of them. And they have frozen lasagnas under their arms. And they just come down from the ceiling like Kitchen Impossible.
Yeah. So but they're trading memorial cards on their bridges and everything. They're like, you know. Vigilantes.
Yeah, and I think they don't even have ages. They just exist to do those things. So they're in your house, you know, 24/7 cooking you dinners. And my friends were in the bed with me, like making sure, like giggling with me in the mornings, picking out clothes for me for the funeral. So for a split, you know, for about a week, you're kind of lulled into this false sense of security. You're like, well,
right.
This is great, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's around sharing stories and like our house felt so warm and so full. But obviously people go back to work, people go back to their lives, their family. So it was a few weeks later that it really sunk in that like, this is my life. Like I'm back here. I don't know where I'm going. I've no money to kind of go forward. I can't drive. And I felt, yeah, incredibly lonely. And all I wanted was my mum to come back and tell me what to do.
Of course.
And it was, I think I remember when my dog had pissed on the ground because he had really bad arthritis, and I was trying to like lift him up onto his all fours, so I usually put this towel under him, and he refused to walk for 2 months after mom died. So every morning I would walk out into the gravel, I would say, come on Charlie, and he would hobble over to the end of the stairs and look up waiting for mom with her sunflower jumper. Oh. And then he would go back under the stairs, And I always say to people, like, dogs' hearts break just like ours.
They do.
And that moment when he peed and I fell onto the pee as well, trying to lift him. And I remember just sitting, like, just cowering over, just like, this is the lowest of the lowest.
God.
Yeah.
What extraordinary work you did to pick yourself up from all of that.
Yeah. And so that's why I wrote the show, because I want to show people that often we hear stories or we see people who are successful and they've had like a long line, like a very obvious path to get there.
Yeah.
Or they've had privilege or family or whatever. And I want to show people that, like, you can be sitting in your dog's piss 1 minute and then the next, you know, 15 years later, you can be bringing your own show to the Ambassador Theatre, you know?
It's a nice feeling.
Yeah.
The latter one.
Yes.
Did you have counselling along the way to help you?
Yes. Yeah, so when the pandemic hit, I got therapy finally. So I was like 35 when I finally went to therapy. And that was probably one of the best things I'd ever done for myself.
That's quite late, considering that's 12 years after.
Yeah, I think I'd spent 12 years kind of convincing myself I was fine and taking care of everybody else, even though no one asked me to. But I think I was just trying to distract myself from my own pain.
Maybe not dealing with your own grief then.
100%.
You were so busy.
Oh, yeah. Just running around pretending that everyone else was suffering, but I was fine. And then when the pandemic happened and I'd nowhere to run, I'd no job, no relationship to distract myself, no friends to sort of go out for drinks with. And there in that emptiness, I finally let myself break. And letting myself break was one of the strongest things I'd ever done.
This also, I think, coincided with a bad relationship breakup.
Exactly. Yeah. So my ex, he broke up with me the week of the pandemic and he moved back to London. Yeah. And then our landlord was like, well, you guys have to move out if you can't pay the rent between four of you. And and then my job was like, we won't be hiring you back.
You'd left the family home at this stage. Okay.
Yes.
And your job wasn't letting, so everything was going wrong.
Everything, yeah. Because I was only working I was in 0 hour contracts as an English language teacher. So
right.
I wasn't even in stable employment. I kind of, the grief kept me trapped in this sort of, I say I was always stuck in the in-between. Mm-hmm. I was terrified to move on with my life because I felt like I'd be betraying my mom if I totally moved on. And I think I stopped thinking I deserved any happiness. So I kept my life very sort of mid, just to avoid being too happy.
Nice Gen Z term.
Yeah.
Very mid.
Just to show you Midland. That I'm still young.
Exactly. What did that big break then, in terms of the grief and everything catching up with it, what did that look like? What did it do to you?
It was like, honestly, I say to people, like, don't be afraid to let yourself feel sad. I think I realized, oh my God, this whole time I was terrified of just letting myself feel sad. I was trying to prove to the world that, like, oh, look, I've got this. I'm so strong.
Right.
I'm the big sister and I'm here. I'm so strong. And actually, in that kind of emptiness and in the loneliness, I just let myself fall apart. And I was like, what's the worst that can happen? Nothing happened. I just cried and cried and cried. And afterwards, I felt completely and utterly liberated.
Did you?
Yeah. I was like, I just spent days crying and being like, I'm really sad. And then realizing, oh my God, this is the thing I was terrified of for 15 years, was just letting myself feel it all. And then after that, I was like, okay, I think I need therapy. And what I said to my friends, they were like, yeah, duh. And I said to my therapist, when we started, I said, I'm so worried that if I'm not someone's sister, and I'm not someone's daughter, and I'm not someone's girlfriend, I'll disappear. And then she just looked at me and she goes, I can still see you. And then, yeah, those words always choke me up. And she asked me, like, what do you want from your life, Aoife? I was like, I don't know. I don't think I ever thought I deserved to ask myself that or deserved to go for what I wanted. And she asked me what my dreams were. And that was the first time anyone asked me in like nearly 20 years. And I was so embarrassed to tell her, like, oh, I always wanted to be on stage. And then she looked at me and she's like, let's make that happen.
Really?
And that was, that was like two years ago, 3 years ago.
You had been enmeshed in all the work that you had to do.
Yes.
To rebuild your life.
Yeah.
And then you started pursuing your dreams. You did go back to South America as well. Did
yes.
you? Another thing that you had to abandon, obviously.
Yeah. So I felt like it was coming full circle. So I was turning 35 and it felt like, I'm doing a year and a half of therapy at this point. And I was like, I'm in my healing era. That's another Gen Z term.
Yeah, it is.
Just using them all, pretending I'm still in my early 30s. And I was like, right, I'm going to go do ayahuasca, which is this plant medicine, which is supposed to be helping you on your healing journey. But it's really expensive. And I didn't have any money. Like I said, I was working 0-hour contracts as an English language teacher. So I texted all my friends and I sent them my Revolut link. And I said, girls, I've been at every baby shower, hen party, wedding, first birthdays.
Because everyone's life has just
gone
on.
Okay, everyone's life. They've done all these things. I was like, I've never asked you to do these things for me. So here's my link. I'm going to go do plant medicine with indigenous people in Brazil. Pay up. I made 2,000 euros, Oliver.
Really?
Yes.
That was great. Tax free, obviously. It's a gift.
Tax free, I hope. Yeah, it was a gift, by the way. Revenue.
You're allowed. You're allowed. Ayahuasca, that's a hallucinogenic drug.
Yes.
Not recommended, by the way. There's a health risk for people with mental health problems.
Yes.
So you're taking a massive gamble there. Because it can be a very frightening experience. I was looking it up, similar to a traumatic incident, but thankfully. Yes. You somehow managed to emerge.
I wouldn't recommend it. Like, it's not like a good time. So I don't tell people. Like, when people ask me, I'm like, oh no, it's deeply, like, it's a lot of work on yourself. It was a painful experience, let's say, but I discovered a lot about my grief. Because someone there was like, oh, you're going to see heaven and you're going to see your ancestors and all this sort of stuff. So I was like, okay.
I'd be running a mile.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to see my great grandmother. But then I ended up, all it showed me was my life backwards. So I saw across the screen kind of like a projector and I saw all these simple moments, like, you know, my friends holding my hands as my mom was lowered, me, you know, making the lunches for my brother, even my ex breaking up with me, discovering the cold water, all these simple moments that I thought made my life insignificant. And for when I saw them plastered across the sky, I was like, oh my God, my life's still beautiful. Like, it didn't take the path that I wanted and I'm not in Bridgerton, but it's still beautiful. And I had this new overwhelming sense of gratitude for my kind of significantly insignificant life. And I came home and just felt so proud of where I was. And then from that moment, my life has completely changed.
Oh my God. We don't know you beforehand, but we
like
what we're hearing now. You sound very together. What a beautiful story, says this texter. A lot of people listening can relate to it, including myself. She's an amazing woman. That's from John in Limerick. Aoife is a star. I just done my makeup today and she's making me cry.
Aww.
I'm so happy things are going well for her. From Mary in Naas. Wednesdays in May usually aren't the most emotional for me, yet here I am, barely able to see the screen.
Oh,
there you go. It's like hearing my own story. So there's another person. After a few months in New Zealand, I travelled home for the same reason.
Oh, God love
this
her.
Beautiful woman has given words to my story. I am sobbing.
Oh, okay.
But that's thankfully lovely. We don't have to sob all the time because it's a comedy show.
Yes.
Also, your life has turned out very well, isn't it? Where do you live now?
I've moved down to Kilkenny with my boyfriend. So I said it's a trial though, we're testing it. I never saw myself in Kilkenny.
Yeah. Is he from there?
He's from there.
Oh yeah.
Is he and he lives next to his parents. So
what does he do? Can we ask?
He teaches in a special school. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. One of the great angels.
He's amazing. Yeah. So he's a lot of patience.
Is he farming as well?
And he's a farmer.
And this is someone you found on Tinder.
Yeah. I know.
They're there.
They're there, women. Very eligible bachelors are still there.
Does he laugh at your shows?
Oh my God, he keeps laughing. Whenever people come to my shows, they always message me afterwards, being like, oh my God, I was in front of your boyfriend and he was howling. I was like, yeah, I know, he finds me hilarious. I don't know why.
Part of the process as well is selling the family home in Kinvara.
Yes.
What a moment that must have. What did you do on the day you last set foot in this house that holds such an amount of your story and everything that's happened to you?
Yeah, it was... I actually was fine. Like, I think I was like, again, I was thinking like, oh, this isn't too bad. Like, we packed up the things, my brother, because my other brother's in Korea. So it was just my younger brother, my sister and our partners. And I was like feeling fine. And then 2 weeks after I woke up in the middle of the night and my boyfriend was next to me and I shot up out of bed and I started crying and he's like, what's going on? And I remembered the ash trees in our house and I just remembered my mom standing under them with her hands on her hips. And I would sometimes not want to startle her because she loved the way the wind moved in the ash tree leaves and the way they kind of bend. And I just had that image in my head and I looked at him. I was like, I'll never have those ash trees again. And it's sort of like, I remember just feeling this immense sadness. But now that I've learned what to do with this, I just let myself feel it. And I said, okay, you know, close my eyes. And I wrote a poem about it. And yeah. Are you crying
You're
now?
You're setting us all off again.
Oliver's
I'm gonna
crying
have a cup of
now.
Tea. I'm slurping tea. There are other happy things that have happened since.
Yes.
You mentioned your dad earlier, who wasn't in the scene in your
yes.
life.
Yeah.
That has changed, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you can say.
Yeah. So my dad, so he left when I was in my kind of early teens. But he has a new daughter now, my half-sister, Lily. And she's amazing. She's nearly 10. And seeing him be just an incredible father to her, and it's given me such hope and, again, a new grow, a new love for him. And it just shows me people can change. And yeah, I love seeing him now. And I texted him recently being like, "You're a great dad now, Dad." And that's amazing.
It's been quite the roller coaster.
I've ruined you for the rest of the day.
When your friends go to your show, by the way, has your dad been to the show yet?
No, but hopefully he'll be at the one in
September.
That's
another stage, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
Okay. When your friends go, when they're not laughing, they're obviously crying and hugging you at the end. But they say they always knew you would end up here.
Yeah, because I'm shocked. The last year and a half has been the fastest roller coaster ever. All I've had to do is say yes to things. I mean, I'm not that woo-woo and spiritual, but like this has all arrived at my doorstep. I think once I started accepting my life, then it changed. And people started offering me things and people said, "Do you want this gig?" And, "Oh, you should try this." And all I had to do was keep saying yes. So for me, this all still feels a bit unreal. And I still struggle with my self-worth. And I'm still in therapy because I still don't think I deserve this. And if it wasn't for my friends who are constantly my biggest cheerleaders, and they're always, yeah, like there's some of them now are listening, you know, they've pulled the car in. They're like, "You're going to be on the radio, oh my God." And they're probably crying listening as well. But they come to my shows and they're like, "Aoife, this is not a surprise to us. This is absolutely where you deserve to be." So yeah, my friends are.
The world is telling you utterly deserve to be where you are now. Like
yeah.
Nobody else is.
Yes.
And going by your storytelling this morning, I'd say it's an outstanding show. And we can all go out and enjoy it.
Yes.
Because it is happening as part of the Galway Arts Festival. It's a good idea.
Yes,
in
yes,
July.
Yes.
And you're coming to Dublin's Ambassador Theatre in September. I'm going to go to that one.
Please come.
It's called Good Grief.
Yes.
We can't miss you now.
And it's loads of fun. There will be tears, but I promise you, it's hilarious.
It's kind of life story and comedy and everything in between.
Yeah, it's about all the mistakes we make and how the absurdity of life as well. And you've got to celebrate it all, the ups and downs. And it doesn't matter what path you had imagined. The path you're on is exactly where you're supposed to be.
Okay, Aoife Dunn, thanks a million for coming in.
Sorry for making you cry.
I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. I don't. Aoife Dunn, where can we look up, by the way, to tell people?
If you can follow me on Instagram, Aoife is never done. I'll also be playing Cypress Avenue in Cork, dates released next week, and Belfast as well. So.
Excellent. Okay, yes. We'll follow you along the way and probably a novel. Lots of messages for you, which we hope to come before the end of the programme. In the meantime, Aoife Dunn, slán go fóill.
Thank you so much.
Lovely messages after Aoife Dunn, our comedian this morning. Aoife should be immensely proud of the strong woman she's become. What a journey she's travelled. Sounds like a best-selling novel. Congratulations, best wishes. This person says, "You just made me feel at 50 like I need to live even more. While I hope they will never need to be, I can only wish I've raised my children to be even half as resilient and capable as Aoife Dunn. Your siblings will be more grateful to you than they could ever be to a parent. Please get this show to Galway." Yeah, well, she's going to the Galway Arts Festival down in Cork as well. "Aoife, you've lifted my heart," says another one. "Lost two family members and a close family friend in September, and you've made me smile in my grief, which goes and comes," says Elaine. Inspiring stuff. A person here says, "I went through the same thing at 30 after death and a breakup. Unfortunately, hit the drink, went down a very black hole. But thankfully, due to much treatment, 6 years sober, married, mum and back teaching. Congratulations to that person. And someone else who says, an older person will get back on track after hearing this story. So